and welcome to the Afro Reads podcast with your hosts,
Amara
and Ugochi.
Afro Reads is a book review podcast that was created out of our shared love for reading African fiction books.
We talk through its themes and try to tie its key messages to our African heritage, culture, and contemporary issues.
We invite you to turn the page and let's begin. Everyone, oh my god, we are back. We are on episode 15. Welcome everyone to Afro Reads podcast. It's been too long, so hello. I think the last one we did was like in March.
Yeah, the long time. It seems like it's been a long time.
But yes, despite, you know, the delays, we are still very much committed to reviewing and really just bigging up African literature. So here we are again. And this time we are in the country of Uganda. Our book for this week is The First Woman by Jennifer Makumbi. Very interesting read. Very long though, like 400 and something pages. It's a bit of a read, but once you get into it, it's a nice family-friendly book with quite a lot of themes as well. So as usual, I am your host, Amara, and I am joined by my co-host,
Ugochi.
Hi, Ugochi.
Hi, and hi, everyone.
And we have a special guest today. Her name is Nasiba. She's not Ugandan, but she might as well be because she's really into this book. And we're so happy to like get her to be on a guest on this episode because she's going to make us think and just really appreciate the book. So Jennifer, please introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Hi. My name is Nasiba. I am Kakarang, K-A_K-A-R-A-N-G, Kakarang on Instagram. I co-host the Two Book Club. I read mainly African literature, although I'm trying to diversify my palette, but I read many African literature, anything, everything African literature. I review books. I talk about books. I live books. I sleep books. I wake up to books. Yes.
Nasiba, again, it's amazing to have you on our podcast and we can't wait to get into the nitty-gritty. So guys, please follow her. So it's Two Book Club.
I co-host Two Book Club and my Instagram is at Kakaran. So if you go to Two Book Club, you still see my handle in the profile, K-A_K-A-R-A-N-G on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. Thank you, Nasiba. So as we said, as like an icebreaker as a guest on the show, we would ask you random icebreaker questions just to get to know a bit more about you as well. And it also gives us a chance, Ugochi and I, to kind of like spill the beans on our lives. So things outside the book. So I'll start with the first question. What's the most interesting thing that has happened to you in the past week?
In the past week?
Yeah.
Maybe last week. I can speak for last week. Something very interesting happened last week. Okay. So last weekend, I took on like work to do some writing, some research work. And I was working towards a deadline. I was cramping and I was just at the cafe trying to finish this work because I was supposed to submit at 7 and it was maybe about 3. And so I was cramping, I was tired, I was sleepy because I was so tired. And this guy just walks up to me and then he's like, oh, you look so tired. And then he says they should give me tea. And then I had this tea and I slept a bit. When I had a bit of energy and I finished the work, I think I finished about 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. So I posted on my Snapchat that I said this guy bought me tea and I'm going to collect the guy's number. So I walked up to this guy to say, oh, thank you so much for everything. Like, I'm done with the work and I'm leaving. We chat a little. And I just get up and go and call my Uber. I didn't collect a guy's number. Then again, I'm like, okay. He comes up to me and he says, oh, can we grab drinks? But at the time he says, can we grab drinks? My Uber is waiting.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, I've called my Uber. So I'm so tired. I just want to get home. Like, we talk. We had like 3 times. Oh my goodness. 3 times. And I didn't even get his number. I don't even know if I got his name, if I got anything. And then I went home. When I got home, so my sister was following my snaps. Mm-hmm. When I got home, she started raining insults on me. She said, all those, look at all the opportunities to take your boy's number. You didn't take your boy's number, you are here. That's how you'll be single for life. Like, she said, insults on me. It was so funny. And I kept saying, I'll find the guy. But it's a week and I have not found this person.
Missed opportunity. You don't understand the struggle here, so believe it. And yeah, I miss opportunities like that where like a random stranger would like do something really kind for you in like random cafes in for us it was in Nigeria and stuff, but in the UK you don't really get that. I remember someone just randomly filled up my tank at a petrol station in Abuja. And the same thing as you, like I forgot to get his name, number. And yeah, you know, that kind of someone actually looks at you, like you look at you as a person. It's really nice. We don't get
that
in the UK. So, man, next time, please remember all of us. And do the needful.
A popular cafe, like a popular cafe or...
Yes, it's a popular cafe. Like, everyone, we go, it has Wi-Fi working. Like, we just go there to work. People just come to eat, but mostly it's just for, like, people who work remote jobs or, like, entrepreneurs. We just go there and sit there. It's a very popular cafe, actually. They have so many branches in Ghana. But this one particular East Legon branch, like, there's a whole... And I met this guy there, like, and I'm a regular. And I was just meeting him there.
Oh, man.
You know?
Ask the bartender.
Yeah, someone. Like,
ask. I don't know. There must be someone that has seen him before. It's not too late. Not too late. All right. Next question. But yes, please.
That was a good one.
No, it's not a good one. It can end well.
It can end well if you really you can try and chase him down without him knowing that you're chasing.
Yeah. Well, let's move on, Sha. So if you could have dinner with any historical figure, dead or alive, who would it be and why? With all your literary prowess.
I don't have just this one person. Like, I have quite a number of them.
At your dinner party, who would you have at your dinner party?
Exactly. At my dinner party. First, I would want, I want to have, Roxane Gay. I want to have...
Oh, that's why I'm screaming.
Who's that?
Oh, Roxane! Has written quite a number of books, but she's maybe she's Black American. I don't want to call her Black American.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But yes, she's Black American. Mm-hmm. And she writes books along the lines of like feminism, body autonomy, and all of that. Yes. I want to have dinner with Ransom Mikuti. Yes.
Who? Fela
Kuti? Fela's mom. Yes, Kumilayo. Yes. And then Kwame Nkrumah. And then, like a whole, they're just in my head. Maybe Margaret Atwood.
That one is alive now. You can make your connection.
Yes.
Have you written to her?
But I'm not a very, yes, but I'm not. But as for Roxane, yes. Belle, yes. Bell Hooks too. I know that one too. I'm not sure if you know Bell Hooks.
Of course.
Yes. So, yeah, like there's a certain kind of palette take in reading books, that if you don't read towards like political consciousness and feminism, you may not know some of them, even though they write very, very absolutely amazing books. Yes.
Baldwin.
James Baldwin. Yes. Baldwin.
I've heard of his name. Yeah. What do you write?
So he's written A Bale Street Could Talk. He's written Giovanni's Room. He's written
I've watched the movie actually.
Yes. So he wrote that. Yes.
All right. The third question is quite easy. What's your go-to comfort food?
Kenke or fufu.
Kenke, what's that? Kenke. Is that your diary? No, sorry. No.
So sorry, kenke is made of corn.
Corn, okay.
Yes, kenke is made of corn. So
when you make it, though, it's kind of like fufu, right?
No, so it's wrapped in corn husk.
Okay.
And then you boil it. Okay. So you eat it with pepe and shito and fried fish or grilled fish or whatever, yes.
Have I had it before? No, I don't know. I don't think so, but I have heard of it.
I've definitely had that before. I love that.
So kenke is my go-to food.
I'm going to tell my Ghanaian friend to make it for me. Kenke. Okay, cool. Okay. And then when you say fufu, what soup?
Light soup with goat meat.
Light soup. I have had light soup. Proudly so in Ghana.
Light soup with goat meat. Yes.
Okay, okay, cool. Ugochi, do you have a comfort food?
Comfort food.
Or plantain. Plantain is also my comfort food.
I find it too sweet. I find
anyhow it comes.
You know, I find plantain like a sweet comfort food, like a comfort food I don't deserve to have every day. I don't know.
Why?
Why?
I find it like too luxurious. So I feel like you should be eating it like small portions with like rice. And you can't have it every day.
Oh, right. It's how you eat plantain. Here, I eat roasted, like, I love roasted plantain, like, with every breath in me.
Ooh, with groundnuts.
I don't mind how, with groundnuts. Like, I don't mind how roasted plantain, how plantain comes. Fried, roasted, whatever. I'll eat roasted plantain.
Me, I like eat popcorn. Plantain.
I was thinking that. Popcorn.
Nice, fresh, kind of, not stale, just
fresh, salted, sugar.
Oh.
Both. I like both. Or the toffee. Again, the toffee one is a bit luxurious, but like, I don't really like the salty. It has to be salty and sweet, or sweet or toffee.
I've thought of my comfort food. I really like seafood. I love seafood.
Oh my God, seafood. Oh, that's like my sister. My sister's comfort food is seafood. Anything seafood, like.
Anything seafood.
Really, anything seafood. Anything I used to like sushi, and then one bright day.
I don't like sushi. I don't have a palate for those, for that sushi, all of that. I beg. I want kinky.
Do you like seafood?
I would eat seafood, but it's not like a die for thing. It's like, I feel like eating seafood once a while, but I will eat kinke any day. I will eat roasted plantain. I'm
provoked. You have to go to the Ghanaian restaurant.
But do you have a particular seafood?
I love crab, lobster, shrimp. Wahala. I love clams. I love sushi. Sushi, I can just sit there and just...
See, I used to love... One day, I just said I don't like it anymore. So now I... And when like the craving comes up, but that's rarely. But usually before, sushi, when my sister will come from the UK, because I used to live in Nigeria, I'll tell her, please go to M&S and pack sushi first. I don't care if it's spoiling, just pack. Just don't bother. Okay, that's interesting. It's making me hungry. So Nasiba, you're almost there. Tell us about a book, movie or TV show you've been obsessed with recently.
Recently. So for the past, I've been obsessed with a number of books recently. One is Vagabonds. Like, I've been obsessed with Vagabonds. I'm telling you, I've read that book more than like 10-20 times for the author to send me like 2 extra copies. I love books that the book does not conform.
Yeah.
it doesn't conform to anything. You know, I love the chaos in the book and the normalcy at the same time. As it's a book I love.
So is it just Vagabond. One part book or is it like
more? It's just one part book.
And Vagabond. Who is it written by?
Eloosa Osunde.
Ah, it sounds like a Nigerian book.
Yeah, she's very Nigerian, of course.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's very Nigerian. It so came out like
ashamed of us.
I know.
Look at me. It
came
know,
in really like wild ways.
Or something.
I read it out, like before it was published. And when it was published, I was on and on about it. Another book that I love is You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it because, well, they say I love it because I love immoral things, but it's not that. I just love the tenderness in the story. Mm-hmm. It's a really sweet, nice romance book. Mm-hmm. I mean, about the only romance I've read. Yes. And Small World. Small World. I'm obsessed with Caleb.
And we will see. Who knows? It could be our next book review.
Please, let Caleb be your next read. Caleb. I'm obsessed with Caleb Azuma Nelson.
Now, wow. By who?
Caleb wrote Small Worlds and Open Water. It's... you have to read that book. Yes, Caleb. Azuma Nelson.
And the author is Ghanaian, right?
No, that's the name of the author. Yeah, he's Ghanaian, but he lives in, he's British Ghanaian, I think.
Okay, so Caleb. Okay, cool. All right, next, you've given us a lot of like choices. So talk about it. We'll talk about like plans for next year because already end of the year, even if we only do two episodes. Okay, so favorite travel destination or dream vacation spot?
I don't have a dream vacation spot, but I know that one thing that I want to do is to tour Africa as much as I can.
Me too.
That's the one thing I know.
It can't be my money before I'll be cheap. African places, they're not cheap. They like to do Europe.
Yes, they are. Yeah, even I'm going to Europe, it's actually cheaper to tour Europe.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to Europe for vacation than to go to an African country.
Why is that, though? Why do you think it's more expensive?
It's just, again, our import culture, you know. So, again, all the mama puts and all the really African places exist, but they are difficult to navigate. I guess it's like Nigeria, like to get the authentic cuisine that is like
even flights are costly. It's very like if you're flying to Zanzibar, you might as well go to London. It's cheaper. Like it's costly because sometimes they are not straight flights. It has to transit at a point. It's costly.
Yeah, so it's actually I just wish someone could just say, okay, I'm gonna take this, just vex and be like, Africa, just go, don't worry, we got you, Kai. But yeah, like that's something that I'm hoping to do. And every time I visit Nigeria in the past couple of years, like 2-3 years, I try and visit one other African country. So this year I did Cote d'Ivoire, which I'm very proud of. Well,
oh yeah,
very beautiful. That's why I could afford to go. And then last year I did Ghana.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm hoping to try and do like one African country. Obviously, the one I can afford every year.
Yeah.
As like an adjoining trip to my Nigerian travels. But yeah.
I feel so bad. I've only been to Nigeria.
I used to. That's me. And even now, I think I've only been to like 5 or 6 African countries. Like, I just feel it shouldn't be the case. Like,
yeah, it shouldn't.
Yeah, it shouldn't, but it's costly.
It's
the
costly.
Network, the network system is poor, so it's costly, but it's something that I want to intentionally do. I try, but I think I want to live my life doing that, which is an ideal world, just reading and doing that, but that's an ideal life.
But Nasiba, apart from African countries, is there anywhere in the world that intrigues you? Because you're just keeping the theme.
It does not intrigue me. Oh, there's no place that intrigues me. If I want to go, it's because I want to go and look for money and come back. I don't know where it intrigues me. That's not intrigue me.
So nothing like a Canada. You're not going to Jaffa.
You know, that's why I'm saying that that whole jackpot thing is because I'm going to look for money and come back to Africa. I don't have any place that sort of like, even with all the fuss about Paris and all of those, they don't move me. Like, there are no places that.
Different way. Have you visited any other continent and liked the country you visited?
I'm about to, but I know that I don't like it because I'm not in for the craze. Like, I also think that is the sentiment attached to like what I want.
Okay,
it's like I want, like when I visit a place, I want the place to speak for itself. Like, I want to know, you know, it's like you want to trail histories. I'm very interested in histories and the histories of people and the trailing of people. And so those are like, that's what gives me an in-depth to understanding books. And so I want to know all of that. One of the reasons why I'm obsessed with like African countries. And I feel like there are so many hidden gems. And like, this is where the resources is. This is everything. Every other country developed from exploiting Africa.
No, but you know? I agree with
even though like other places are beautiful, like the place of love, the place of, but to say that, oh, I want to, like, I'm obsessed about wanting to go there. No, I want to go there. Yes. I'm not obsessed with it. No. Will I do everything I can't? I'm very passive about it. If I have to go there, it's because I'm looking for money. That's what I just said. I'm looking for money, maybe opportunities.
I'm too hot
when
sometimes.
I get opportunities, I'll come back.
Don't you want like winter, snow, nothing?
My body don't like cold though. I beg. I'm not in for winter snow. I just want money. If there's money, I'll come. Work, take your money, and go and live baby girl life. It's just the money for the soft life. That's all I want.
No, but I agree when you say the museums and the history stuff. I agree with you because I love history as well. And when I was like in my 20s, I used to go to these countries and go to the museums or places of like, you know, but I just realized I wasn't interested. It's not my business if I go into a cave. Like, what if I have no attachment? And then because of that, since then, like, I don't bother. There's no point.
Yeah.
Historical places, but in Nigeria, in a museum, I would know what you're talking about. Or like, I went to Elmina Castle in Ghana, and I really felt it for like one of the few times I was there. And yeah, it's just interesting. Now, before I used to be like, okay, what historical places? At what church? How many churches can you possibly go to that?
Different.
Do you understand? They're all the same as well. So. Now I just go for the food, the vibes, the market. I like
market. Yes,
and the rest is beach and hotel.
Exactly.
I understand what you're saying, but I do like to travel, Sha. So,
Dubai, but Dubai is just for the sightseeing. Like I said, it's just for the sightseeing. That's all. Like Dubai.
Yeah.
I always forget that Dubai is another country outside Africa. So when you ask me, I
okay. Well, you've been to Bandos, Shao. Anyway, no, don't worry. So the Nigeria, we were and we got really excited recently because Tinubu, president, went to Dubai, and there was like this whole photo session of him with.
Yeah, but there's still a ban.
My dear, there's still a ban.
There's still a ban.
Before that, he came out and was like, yes, the ban has been lifted. Or like, that's the
thing. I saw that they debunked it was a hoax. There's still a ban.
UAE have come out to say they don't know what we're saying.
Yes, they said there's still a ban.
So funny. So, but you know, Nigeria people now, will chefs still find a way, Sha?
Yes.
How embarrassing.
Do you understand? How dare they? I bet they should take their country and chop. Anyway, the last question, so that we'll leave you alone, is if you could have a superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, this question, I find it so hard reading minds. I don't know if I want to know what
people want. Wow. But someone said I'll be depressed.
You won't be depressed.
Look how much his face.
Yeah, you won't be depressed, honestly. Yeah. I don't think I want to know. I think maybe my superpower should be I should be embodied. I should live life very peacefully and embodied. I don't want to know. Like, even if the world is burning, I actually don't care. Like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know what people are thinking. Maybe to be able to fly.
Yeah.
So that then I don't have to pay for to or vanish.
Disappear and appear. So yes. That I don't pay for flight tickets. And I can
exactly. Yes.
That would be nice. Ugochi, do you have anything different?
Something similar maybe to maybe shrink very small so I could fit into if I want to go on a plane.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And transport that way.
Only if, who knows, with the way AI is moving these days, that could be the next project. So,
amen.
Watch this space. Anyway, so let's go to the book. I think we've had enough fun, and we hope, like, at least readers or people listening have gotten to know us a bit better. So I'm going to pass on to Ugochi now to kind of give a spiel about the book we are reviewing today.
Okay, so this is just a quick synopsis. The First Woman is a novel by Jennifer Makumbi. She published this book in 2020, and it's set in Uganda and spans across several generations, at least three generations, right? Primarily focusing on the life of Chirabo, the novelist's protagonist. The book explores themes of identity, womanhood, tradition, and change in Ugandan society. Chirabo grows up in a rural Ugandan village and is raised by her grandparents after her mother abandons her. As she comes of age, she begins to question her identity and heritage, leading her on a journey of self-discovery. She's particularly intrigued by her family's history and the women who came before her. The novel delves into the lives of the women in Chirabo's family, from her grandmother to her mother, and beyond, shedding light on their experiences, struggles, and the choices that they made. Through these women, the novel explores the complex roles and expectations placed on women in Ugandan society, as well as the ways in which they navigate societal changes and patriarchal traditions. As Chirabo seeks to understand her place in this lineage of women, she grapples with questions of heritage, culture, and what it means to be a woman in a changing world. The First Woman is rich and evocative. It portrays a rich and evocative exploration of these themes, blending folklore, history, and contemporary storytelling to create a compelling narrative about one woman's journey to find her voice and identity.
All right. Thank you, guys. The rest of our session is going to be all about the book. So if you haven't read the book, this is a good time to probably like end the podcast. But if not, there are going to be lots of spoilers. Someone dies at the end. Sorry. Well, we'll reveal the name soon. But anyway, so let's get into the question. So First Woman. So the title, The First Woman, is quite significant in the book. What do you think it represents in the context of the story? And what significance does it hold for you personally?
Okay, so I've thought about this a lot. And when I think about First Woman, it takes me back to Chintu, the book Chintu, Makumbi's other book, Chintu. It takes me back to that book to think about First Woman as the first woman who was created on the earth. And so when I think about it, that's what I used to think about. And you know, First Woman was republished too. Was published again by another author to a girl is a body of water.
Yeah.
And when I think about it, I just think about it's just looking at like women that have done significant things in the book. That's when I think about First Woman, that's just what I think about in the book, like the women in the book and the significance, because each played like a very separate and distinct role in the book. I think about the role each of the women played, especially in trying to retell their stories, in trying to not conform to societal stereotypes and all of those things. So that's actually what I think about when I think about First Woman. I think that somebody even asked Makumbi this the last time Makumbi was in Ghana, and we're having a conversation with Makumbi about this whole. And I think that her response would be, or was, it was just looking at like women and how like they translate their roles from, and it had something to do, deeply rooted some way in feminism and sort of in comparison, and like the first woman from Chintu that was supposed to be Eve. Yes, yeah, so like women actually.
All right. Thank you, Nasiba. Ugochi, did you want to add?
Yeah, I agree with you, like everything that you said. And also at the end, was it Nsuta said to Chirabo when she was dying? Like,
yeah.
When you go on and tell people about the first woman, like mm-hmm. tell it exactly what tell she said.
Like, please carry on. But even if you have to add some bits to it,
mm-hmm.
just ensure you tell the story. And then she said something about, because if you're silent, people
no, like stories are critical. Is it where she says stories are critical?
This is at the very end. Did she say stories?
Yes, at the very end, she also said something about stories being critical.
Because if you're silent, someone else will tell it.
Yes. Someone else will tell your story for you.
Mm-hmm. So with everything that you said and that, I think of first women being women who are being unapologetically themselves with the power that they have. And making significant strides in society.
Yeah.
That's what I think about.
Yeah, same as well. And very much connected to the idea of flying. So obviously Chirabo and thinking she had special powers in the beginning. And Ugochi, I was just telling you before we started the recording that it's crazy. Like in the beginning, even Nsuta was very excited that Chirabo could fly.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the book, Chirabo kept saying, oh my God, I hope I haven't disappointed, you know, the fact that disappointed the character of the first woman that Nsuta told me about. Even right up to secondary school, she kept like judging her classmates or events in school and saying, these people are not the first women that Nsuta was saying, right up to the end when Nsuta like disappointedly asked her, so you're not flying anymore. I really thought you would fly.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's connected to like that first woman, as you guys said, that whole feminism, unapologetic self, and then finally growing up and realizing, nah, it's not the way the world works kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like your first woman, but eventually it's all...
It kind of goes away.
Unfortunately goes away. And that's why maybe she was saying, please keep telling these stories, kind of like a plea. Like even if the reality hits you, mm-hmm. it's important to keep telling that story of the first woman.
Mm-hmm.
And because we need to believe that one day or something, we'll break free and leave ourselves and be in like a feminism utopia
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So,
exactly.
Does it mean anything to you guys personally?
First woman?
Yeah. So it says, does it hold anything? Maybe yes, maybe not. But
for me, so I think about like, how I see first woman for me personally is that, you know how in a society or even in your small family, you are probably the woman who does something. Mm-hmm. There's something that you will do that sets you apart from other women. Or there's always someone who is non-conforming or who starts sort of that sets a certain invisible glass ceiling that they said it's there. You know, so that's how I think about that. The significance it holds for me, like each one of us are the first women, you know,
of something,
especially in this struggle, each one of us. So every single thing, and it was very significant in the book, like every single thing that you do, every single stereotype that you break, you know, is contributing to something, no matter how small that is. Every single ideology that you hold, that you live by, it contributes to something. It makes you like, so I feel like each one of us, that's the sort of significance sort of holds for me, like each one of us are like first women mm-hmm. in things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like just piggybacking, sorry, that's like a conference-y meeting-y word. Back in of what you've just said, you talked about female protagonists. So, as you said, there are quite a lot in the book. So, for this next question, I want us to like each maybe take a female character and just try and explore their journey of navigating complex traditional expectations that were placed on women in society. In other words, how were they first women? And how did the women challenge or embrace traditional expectations? So it could be Chirabo, Nsuta, Alikisa, or Mukamiro, Gibwa, Auntie Abby, Auntie Ya, yeah, or yeah. Oh, no, Auntie Y, sorry, that's what they called her. Auntie Y, Nambi, Nkusu. Is her name Nkusu? Sorry, Chirabo's mother, forgotten her name. Naku. So just choose one or two characters and tell me why you think they were first women or a first woman.
I don't know how easy it will be to pick one because I feel like their stories are interconnected.
Half of will join you.
Okay, so first off, I don't know if this question will come, but I wanted to set a premise to this question. And the premise that I want to set is that one of the most dominant themes that happen or that occur in this book is feminism. The whole book is built on feminism. So if we take up on the opening, if we remember Tom's sister, the one who got pregnant, and the father,
I forgot her name. Starts with G.
yes, forgotten her name, but I remember the story. I read this book so long ago, but I remember her so well. She
Yeah.
got pregnant, and the father sat there from the house, and the father said that there is only room for only one woman in this house. Everyone else is a child. And so because she got pregnant, like she can leave. And when you look at why she was sent out, there was nothing that she did that Tom had not done before.
That's true.
Tom impregnated somebody.
A 13-year-old, well, he was 17.
Exactly. Had a child. And this child was accepted into the house
Yeah.
and was not for 1 second even maltreated or made to even feel not a part. But this is her who has gone out and who is pregnant, but there's no room for her because there's only room for one woman, which is Alikisa and not her. And so when I think about her story, I think about sort of at that time, seeing the time this book was written, was set in. When I think about her, even it wasn't out of the ordinary at that time for someone to get pregnant. After all, Tom impregnated a 13-year-old anyways, even though it wasn't done in that community. But this was somebody who was scaling walls and all of that. I mean, she was. The story gives us a background that she was promiscuous, in quotes, but it also speaks to the kind of shame that we put on women's bodies because it was okay for Tom, but it was never okay for her. But she left anyways. When he sat there, she did go. She only came back when Tom had died because she just wanted to be accepted back into the family. But it was not because she has not survived before, or she could not survive on her own. And when the book tells us this story, it looks like in that family, she was about the only person who did that. But she didn't come back to beg or to be hungry that she couldn't feed her families and all of that. Like she did go. And even though she was one of the first people that had this unfortunate encounter and was disowned and forgotten and refused, her name was not supposed to be mentioned at home. She went anyways. When I think about her, I think about that sort of strength, that sort of inner strength that comes with like a woman to have to do this for herself, because she didn't have any money, she didn't have any education, nothing. And she was from a comfortable home, but she went. She didn't even go to Tom for any help. And so she's one character that can easily be overlooked on. But also, when I think about her, her story is very instrumental to the plot of First Woman and the foundation in which it's built on. Another person that I will look at, should I look at Chirabo's friend or Chirabo?
Yeah.
No, let me leave Chirabo and look at Chirabo's friend.
Gibwa.
Yes.
Okay.
Even though Gibwa, she was annoying me at some point. So first, she was Chirabo's friend who was after... The problem with the positioning was that this guy, Sio put himself in that position, but Sio was easily forgiven anyways. But I felt like Chibua felt less of herself in front of Chirabo because Chirabo already had, like, she had not even gone to the university yet, but she had land in her name. She had property. She had opportunity, an opportunity that Chibua did not have. She was just there, pregnant with Sio's child. And in all the equation, she looked like the bad person.
Yeah.
And she looked like she had betrayed her friend. But Sio that betrayed the love, as for that one, he was treated a lot more kinder than she was. But I also understood, like, she was not remorseful. The venom in which, like, she spoke. When I think about her character, I see a lot of, like, a lot of ourselves in Jibwa.
Me too. Because, I feel like the whole of Africa, the way we responded to colonialism is Kibwa. Sorry, Kibwa,
yes.
I don't like it when people are angry with her. There's nothing to be angry about. There is nothing.
I see a lot of ourselves in her a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes me want to, that makes me understand the position that she's in.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like some of the things were just brought upon her by her own self. You know, that was like, Chirabo did not in any way make you feel anything. But that does not mean that you will not feel the way that you are feeling. Even though they were best friends, there was a gap. There was a classist gap.
Yeah, there was a classist
gap. She could see, even in the community, that even she could see and she could feel it. Who Chirabo did not even feel. And that's the depiction of the world. Like, privileged people don't think they are oppressing non-privileged people because they are not seeing it.
Yeah.
You know? But it doesn't mean that that oppression is not there just because they are not recognizing it. It's like patriarchy. Men think that, oh, I respect women, I do all of these for women. But the fact that you do that does not mean that you don't enable something by your actions.
The
fact that you are not intentionally doing it does not mean that that oppression does not exist.
Yeah.
And that was like, and I felt like that was the drift. That was what they were trying to marry between two of them. Because here is people feeling this way. Here is Chirabo saying, you have no right to feel that way because I do not make you feel, I did this, I did that. But the class gap was clear.
Yeah.
The class gap was clear. You didn't intentionally do something, doesn't mean it does not exist. You know, and she was feeling that way. And she was even more hurt because Sio did not even like her. And it was even Jibwa who put herself on Sio. I remember. And that was why I was so annoyed at her. Because she just felt, she just looked like a hungry person trying to fit in at all costs. And Sio would have been her ticket to something. Because
I
even Sio was
from the community. Why didn't you use a condom? Don't even try it.
I'm not blaming her.
Why didn't he use a condom?
Oh, I'm not saying Sio is not a fault too. That's I'm just it. Saying that Sio accepted responsibility. It was Jibwa that was not accepting responsibility.
And be infatuated with him.
But this is your friend.
You know,
I beg you, which friend?
And I understand why people will go after Jibwa because they are not even angry. You know, like, we are not even angry that she did. It was somebody else. That is the fact that I'm your friend and you owe me loyalty. You know, I'll be more angry at your betrayal than my boyfriend hurting me. Between my friend's betrayal and my partner's betrayal, I will be angry at my friend's betrayal more than my partner's betrayal, because that boy is dispensable, easily dispensable. But I feel like you and I have a history together. We have a life together. So even as much as we don't want to blame her, but she owed, at least she owed Chirabo something.
Yeah.
Something that she failed. You know, and that's where that anger is coming from. You know, so you could have done it with any other woman, you know.
Yeah.
But for it to be you, my friend, and for you, my friend, to have your eye on the thing you know I like.
Yeah.
From infancy, it's telling of the kind of friend that you are to me. I should walk looking behind me, because you could easily do something. That was Chirabo's anger. You know, that was Chirabo's anger.
Can I ask, do you think that her friend went for Sio because he was like scarce amongst them all? Like he was half
an
half
epitome
white, right?
Of what people wanted, which is to be closer,
yes.
Like, yeah, westernization. Yes. And that's why I said Chibwa's character, as you said, is much bigger than us, because I think that's the way Africans operate. Like the way they took, the author took time to describe Chibwa. She was pretty, she was fair. Even people used to compliment her father.
Mm-hmm.
And they were into like the agricultural life and everything. And I feel like that's Africa, right? But we are not satisfied. We still want to change our accent. We still want to be British.
I think that you're not being very fair to Africans if you characterize us that way.
Jesus, and African people. I'm going to edit this out. No, but it's my opinion, sorry. But yeah, no, okay, maybe not.
I see what you're saying. All right, like we wish that it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
and they don't want a lot of.
Yes, I see. Yes, that we want to change ourselves, but I feel like that's like a very linear. Like I feel like there are so many intersections to why this is happening. It's because like you have glorified something to make something else look less.
For example, not even
Djibwa, let's just take the community that they lived in and look at home. You know, everyone felt Tom was better.
Yes.
But Tom was not in his own house. He had nothing because he could speak the Queen's English. He drove a car. Yes. He lived in a big house. Yes. He lived in the city, a house that was not even his. You grew your own food. You lived in your own houses. The lands belonged to you. But they sat and they envied Tom. Chirabo said they envied Tom. She said that, and this was Chirabo's word, the way she stepped her foot in Tom's house, it was the very first time in her life she felt impoverished. You know, but when Tom died, you see, and you see, Tom's death is very significant because Makumbi tells us that Tom died in the middle of life. And she says that Tom's death, the image, like when Tom died, they began to see life in a very clear language.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the imagery was, so brutal, because all of a sudden they must leave the house they live in. Now they are trying to complete. It's the same family completing his uncompleted building somewhere. They have no, all of his belongings fit behind a car, and you realize that the women in Tom's life, who made Tom a god, who sat around him, who envied him, like who were grappling for his attention. Now the center figure is not there and everything has fallen apart and there is nothing to hold. Even between Alikisa and then Usuta, that was their rift. Tom was their rift.
Actually, yeah.
Tom was their rift. And now when Tom wasn't there, it's like everything has fallen apart and there's nothing else to hold on to. So now it's like now the women have to talk to themselves. So you realize that a lot of making up came after Tom's death.
That's true, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the sharp contrast between these two things, it speaks of the same thing about how like we sit here and it's not enough for us. Mm-hmm. We want more. Mm-hmm. But even in now contemporary world, the reason that we want more, it's not even because we think we do not have. It's because there are no structures. Because the system is not working. And that's why you think if the system was working in the part of the world that we live in, we will want to leave this. Everyone wants to leave because we want to live where the systems work. Because here the systems are not working. There are no structures. Everything is negative zero. Not just zero. Negative zero. And so if it was then, I understand, I would understand that contrast, that that was the situation that we were in. We wanted more. We were not okay because we were made to feel like we didn't like ourselves, like we were inferior. So we want to speak a certain way. We want to wear, in fact, even now, when somebody speaks English that isn't good, you find somebody trying to correct the person or trying to not just correct the person. I don't have a problem with correcting somebody. What I have a problem with is shaming somebody for not able to speak correct English when they are not even native English speakers. English is not even indigenous to us. It's how you shame people for writing a certain way when we don't even think in our language. Like when people shame Africa, oh, they write so much, their books are so much, and they, you are reading a foreign book whose indigenous language, look at Asian books, they are so big because English is not, those books are translated. English is, they are not, people that speak English, English is indigenous to them. You see, it's very easy because they think in English. They are able to express their thoughts in English.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think in English. Even Amara, sometimes there are some things that if you hold yourself and you think about it, there's something that you want to say. Like the way you want to describe it, the English word is not doing it for you.
No, it's true. Yeah.
The English word is not doing it for you.
But there are some things I want to say in broken English that
yes,
I'm not able to express it. So I actually say it in the broken English.
Even broken English,
yeah. The popular language in the world. So I completely get what you're saying. Yeah, so that's why I really sympathize with Kibwa. I know what I said is a general,
yes,
realistic statement. But the more you're even talking about it, Nasiba, I'm just like, yeah, she's the embodiment of
yes,
our image sometimes. Let me just say
yes,
sometimes as Africans. Ugochi, is there any other character you want to like spotlight on?
Maybe Nsuta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I think she's a very strong character. And mm-hmm. they label her as a witch in the beginning. And I feel like that word witch is maybe looked at as a negative thing, but maybe in the book or the way I took it is that it's kind of an empowering, freeing word because she was in love with Chirabo's grandfather,
Miro.
Miro. They had a relationship and she chose to go out and get an education.
Yeah.
Yes.
She trusted her friend. She trusted her friend to kind of look after Miro, marry him. And she would write letters to her friend.
Yeah.
And she's still, even with that, she's still like, I hope you guys are doing okay. Still like, still loving.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wouldn't be that way because my friend is with the man that I love. And then when the friend, the grandmother said that she's pregnant.
Yeah.
Nsuta wasn't upset, was she? She was.
No, she wasn't upset because Nsuta couldn't have babies.
She couldn't have babies. Yeah. But for someone that I love to have a child by my best friend and I can't have children, like that's
no.
When she was pregnant, at that time, man, the reason why Nsuta lost the baby, Nsuta was pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think she lost the baby. Something about it was around that time that she couldn't have a baby. So what this woman did was that when she had Tom, she said she had Tom for her. And she brought Tom to her to take care of her. So she gave Tom, the grandfather took Tom and gave Tom to, even though it was Alikisa who gave Tom to Nsuta.
Yeah.
The only reason why they took Tom away from Nsuta was because, one, the grandfather, they will not allow the grandfather to marry Nsuta. Even though there was an understanding that they were living peacefully, but it was a family. And she didn't understand why. You are not married to me. Why can't I date other men? Or why can't other men come to me? So other men were coming to her. So they said, other men were coming to her and Tom was living. That was why they took Tom away. And the only reason was because it was moral. Like she morally should corrupt Tom.
Corrupting.
That was it. In the beginning, the story looked like there was some serious rift going on. But in the end, when the whole thing was explained, you realize that there was really no problem at all.
Problem.
Like, they were really cool. And even the grandfathers, if you remember, even in the beginning, they gave it away. The grandfather was still coming to Nsuta. There was one time that this girl came, Chirabo came to Nsuta to ask her. Yes, the grandfather was there.
Yeah.
He was there.
I'm smelling my father's, my grandpa's cologne.
But you see, they didn't want to explain all of those things to her at that time. But that was what happened. So it wasn't, it's just in the beginning, it made it look like people didn't really understand or grasp, and Chirabo too couldn't grasp. She thought it was like she hated Alikisa, but it was no hate, it was all love.
Yeah.
And she allowed Alikisa to marry the grand. Even Alikisa didn't want to do it. And she said that it was better for the Miro to marry Alikisa, her friend, than for him to go and marry somebody else. She would rather it was her friend. And and then she had that cataract thing that her eye, it kept blinding and blinding before she became permanent. And they were still supporting her. It was, in the end, you just made it look like, ah, so this was just it. Like, well, there's no even problem at all.
Let me interject. So that part you're talking about, Nsuta wasn't always an angel. When her and when Alikisa and Miro got together, you remember she wrote...
Yeah, she started becoming jealous.
Yeah, and Alikisa sent a picture of them. She started getting jealous. Do you understand?
Yes.
She started keeping away. She started becoming distant. She stopped writing.
Yes.
And then Miro's dad was now admitted to hospital. Then she found Miro again, and she started having an affair. I believe that part was a bit malicious. That's my...
It was malicious.
It was a
they
bit
started having an affair.
Let me get behind Alikisa. Do you understand? So I'm just saying, it wasn't always angelic. We are sharing.
Yeah, Amara, I agree. 100%.
So they all had their emotions. You know, they are human beings. It's not possible to have a man like that. Like, emotions come into it. Even Alikisa is not innocent as well. Because there was a time
she wasn't very innocent. She was angry.
Yeah, there was a time she said, Omo, is it that this Nsuta is telling me that even after my education, that what, because I'm uglier than her, I cannot get Miro? Yeah, so they had their...
They had their moment.
Yeah, as all in all, as you said, Nasiba, it was peaceful till the whole immoral thing came about. But you guys, I wanted to touch on the men, because I felt like most of the men in the book used to claim to be feminists. So Miro is an interesting character, because for his wives, obviously, he really did them dirty. He was playing around with basically both of them, right? But for his grandchild Chirabo and his daughters, he really wanted them to be free. He was a feminist, so he was feminist to his daughters and his granddaughters. But he didn't show that same side to his wife, which I thought was interesting.
I think that we should also give Miro some grace.
If you were married to him, or if
let's trace the life of Miro. First, know that Miro did not love Alikisa. To be fair, it was Nsuta he wanted. He did
six, one died. I beg you.
He did not even want to marry Alikisa. But let's move on and to that place where, like, all of the Miro was still a very young man at that time. And let's admit that people grow and they change, or people unlearn and they learn as they grow, you know. Now, Miro has a granddaughter who he does not joke with. He does not play with Chirabo. Chirabo is like, and his daughters, you know, but Chirabo was like everything for him. And for me, when I think about, I think that as a parent, he tried as much as he could, even in the community. But this was a very interesting thing about them for me. When Tom died, like, Tom's death was a very significant part of the book. When Tom died and they were having the funeral, and then they called them to share their things, they called Miro. And then Miro called his daughters and Chirabo, and they said, the women were not supposed to be there when they were sharing the things. And Miro said that this was his house. And he was going to call who he wanted to call. If the eldest thing they didn't like it, they should leave. So first cross on Miro. They've marked Miro one. The daughters are there. And then they start to share. Tom's kids, you know, Tom had a son, very young. He's the one they said should inherit Tom in the house. And then Auntie Abby said, no way. It cannot happen. Because, and you see, even though, first of all, you are not allowed to be at the meeting. You are there. You are not allowed to speak. But Auntie Abby, she did not even wait for them to finish talking. She interjected and said it was not possible. Because to be fair, it was Chirobo that was inheriting her siblings. Because she's the older sibling, she's the older person. So she's the one saddled with the responsibility of taking care of her siblings. So why should, so she's the one supposed to inherit Tom? Because she would need it to take care of her siblings. Why should the youngest child, because he's a boy, be the one? And they said Miro should shut his daughter up. He didn't shut her up. But then when everybody talked, when everybody talked and finished, he brought finality to the case. It was the culture for the boys, for the boy to inherit the father. However, Chirabo, you know, after all of this, after that meeting, he called Chirabo into the room and gave Chirabo papers and said he had given Chirabo her own. There was no need to go and fight for those ones. These ones belong to her. But a very interesting thing about that kind of feminism that went on, that's why I appreciate the growth of that feminism, because it was set in a particular time. And I always take us back to the time that it was set, because it's very important. Even though it was a win, there was a barrier. Now, Auntie Abby and all of those ones, they had, Miro gave them properties too. But you see, the thing is that they could never give the properties to their children. Their children could never inherit those properties.
Yeah.
It was their brother. So in the end, it's Tom's child. It's their brother's kids. Because the idea was that if you're a woman, your children don't belong to us. They will belong to your partner's family. And so if you give our land, it's like there's no continuity in our family. Mm-hmm. Our land will go into a different family. So even though Chirabo had her wealth and her land, she could not give those lands to her children. If she was going to will those lands, it had to be Tom's son.
Yeah, Tommy. Back to
so even though there was a win, if to say that it would look like then there's no win, but I feel like there was a win, because at least the woman could inherit at that point. And I understood like the rationale behind giving it to your brother's child, because it's your brother's child that is carrying our name. Mm-hmm. Your brother's son, our name, and the property belongs to us. So there was a fit. So to say that, I feel like that was also one significant thing that Miro did. One that I really liked. He defended the women. He didn't allow them to trample on them, his wife. Even though you would think that the way he was treating Alikisa was not. I mean, I don't know why you think that he was treating, even though.
All right. I was going to say, let me just summarize everything you've said. I totally agree with what you said about Miro. But if you notice the pattern, and see, said this when they were talking about Mwen Kanon Kanon or something like that, the feminism type. Yes. He said the same thing. I think he said, do you know what? Say what you're saying about this labia elongation. Do what you want to do. Sir, don't teach my daughters this. My daughters will not know about this. It's the same pattern, you know. You're only feminist to your blood, your children and your grandchildren. Yes. When it comes to your wife or whoever it is in that peer group, you don't...
Yes.
In the pattern of the book, you don't seem to practice that.
Yes.
Nambi seemed to be like a very weird in-law. I think she's a normal wife. But same thing, Tom treated her with a lot of respect. Same thing. But, you know, to Chirabo, to Aunt Abby, he was amazing. So I think it's the same pattern. It was just something about the men in that book. And they really set the tone for feminism being passed on to the different generations. Because even if Musa and Ali Kissa had quite a similar history, it's the same nonsense. They started off, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to live life in a very free way and nobody's going to inhibit us. At the end of the day, they still fought over men. Then they are and then Chirabo and then Gibwa, you're still fighting over a man. You know, Aunt Abby, that I thought was a warrior, lived, when CEO did that thing to Chirabo, she still said, look, at least he came and apologized. You better clean your eye and manage this one. Mm-hmm. That's literally what she said. And I remember when we were recording, when we were meeting you for the first time, Nasiba, even the mom, yes. Oh, feminism, feminism, feminism. Oh, she gave up her child so early. But she still went to look for man. In fact, that's why she didn't claim Chirabo, because she was trying to protect man. I think this whole thing about African feminism, we're still struggling. We're still fighting. We're still telling amazing stories of, as you say, there's a lot of wins, but there's still a lot of, we still live in a man's world. We are still in our own ways back to square one almost. And we have to just admit it. There are small wins, but
I think they are actually great wins.
Okay, great wins, but still a long way.
I think it's like that with every movement and every political movement. There's no like utopia. You don't reach a utopian world. What it is that you embrace. There's always there are always like pitfalls in every movement. There are always pitfalls, but it does not discredit the entire work that women have been doing over the years, or the feats women have attained. In the book, there are a lot of, even though it looks like you see, this feminism does not say that what she wanted was a man. It's saying as long as I'm making an example. Like if I want a man, the fact that I've left you to want a man does not bring feminism backwards. As long as I want the man, you know, it is my choice to want the man. It becomes something else if it's the man who says, don't bring the child. That's a different conversation to, I don't want you. I don't want to be a mother for you. Okay, I want a different life. I want to build a different life away from you. And I want to do it with this man, and I want to choose. And I don't want to carry the baggage of you there. I want to do it. It is my choice. I've made that informed decision with it's just an informed decision. It's totally and totally fine. You know, it does not undo feminism. It does not mean that the height feminism has attained, it has shamed it or anything. No. As long as you see, feminism are all for choices of women. That do it as long as it's your choice without any external forces, as long as it is your choice. That is what it is hinged on. And that's why there are like so many problems with it. Like, as long as it's your choice, I'm not doing it because of societal pressures. If you take away all of those things, it is my choice. And even in the book, even if we look at the book, if we talk about the men, mind you, Chirabo's first encounter with the word feminism in even Luganda was from Sio.
Was it?
Sio was the one. And you know, she paid less attention to it because she said that this was Chirabo's word. Because when Sio first used the word, he used feminism. He didn't use the Luganda word for it.
Yeah.
He used feminism. And she said that feminism are for women in first world countries with first world problems.
Yeah.
That's what she said. With first world, the word came up again. And you know, that was when Sio said that what people don't understand is that feminism will also set men free. Mm-hmm. But that's what people do not know. About, they think that it's just a bunch of angry women. And for Christ's sake, what is even wrong with being an angry woman? Bell Hooks would say, what is wrong with being an angry woman? There's absolutely nothing wrong with being an angry woman, because anger is a very important emotion. Auntie Abby was a very angry woman. She was angry about so many things. So many things. And she wanted to teach. She said that when Tom brought Chirabo home, she knew that Chirabo was for her. Mm-hmm. Even though in that place, Chirabo's mom was Auntie Y. Mm-hmm. Yes. But she knew that it was for her. And she was the one who first thought, she first showed Chirabo her vagina.
Yeah.
And said that, and you know, and something Insuta said, that you do not put a target on women's bodies. Even Chirabo said that. Chirabo also showed, when she did the labia elongation, mm-hmm. she showed it to Dio. She opened her legs and she did show it to Dio. And then she was like, do not put a target on women's bodies, because when you put a target on women's bodies, it looks like a mystery. And when it looks like a mystery, it's like people want to unravel it. Then when you see it, what is there to hide again? Like, there's no mystery. And so for me, even when you look at like the development of the book, I felt like it spoke like a lot of things. It mm-hmm. spoke so much on it. Like, it had a strong word sending home, even about body autonomy, to own your own body. And that was Auntie Abby. And even coming to talk about Auntie Y, she was the one who had a car, who had the money, who was working in the house and now had a dead husband.
Her money for him.
But it was the husband who would drive Auntie Wife's car. And she would say, oh, those say, you're looking at, so, oh, it's my husband. Oh, it is a clear depiction of our world today. And that's why nowadays, men will say that when women get small position or small money, they like raise their shoulders. Mm-hmm. Or they behave a certain way. But they have forgotten that women have always had money, even from those days. Mothers were the ones going to markets, having their money, buying them, making the food in the house, buying the food stuff at home. The only difference between now and then is that those times, the women say, it's my husband. Like, they'll never give away that they are the ones taking care of the home or managing the home. I'm the one buying my dress. I'm the one doing this for the children. Because they always make it look like, it's my husband doing it. It's my husband. So that they don't emasculate the man. But nowadays, women, they will not allow you to discredit them because of your ego.
Mm.
You know, they will take up. So that's the difference. But women have always had financial, like, they've always had it. Just that they will give. And that's Auntie White. That's Auntie White's behavior. She was driving a car to say it was her husband. It's her husband's car. But everybody knew that it was for her. You had the money. But everything, she say, it's her husband. They're going to her husband for this. They're going to her husband for that. But her husband had nothing. And he even had still the guts to be a very mean husband. He was a very mean husband.
When I said the thing about, you know, feminism, we're still stuck in that constrained environment. I think I was just remembering what Nsuta said at the end. She was just disappointed. She was disappointed. I was like, with the life you've lived, you know, the struggle of feminism, for you to sit here and be saying, oh, so I really wish you could have flown, I'm about to mess up my English now. She just said it like she was disappointed. And I was like, it's not that easy to fly, actually. There's so much hurdle you have to get through. So I think that's why I was just saying that this is our generation, even our grandmothers, even our mothers, the way they talk to us, like as if you didn't go through it and you didn't understand the struggles. What you're asking me to do now, you didn't do it then. Your life, our lives are actually quite similar. So simmer down kind of thing. I think that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I'm still in one battle or the other, but yes, appreciating like we've moved forward in some way. But it's interesting that I think we spoke about it in our intro call, that even in the 30s, in the 20s, it was still the same sort of struggles, you know. And, you know, some were wins, some were still that kind of, we're still in the constraints of a man's world. But let's move on to the next question. The next question. Okay, we're just going to do like sharp responses. So there are loads of fights in the book. There were loads of conflicts. And one thing I like the author, and we talked about this before we started the podcast, character development. She did it very well. Amazing. In all her interviews, I think I read somewhere that she took about 20 years since 2001.
Yeah.
It kept getting rejected. I'm not sure on what platforms it got rejected, till finally like people gave it a voice and it won an award. Mm-hmm. And stuff. So the character development, there are like hundreds of characters, but you see every single one of them, you were like really you could really defend. There was no good or bad character.
You understood why they did what they were doing. That's part of the character development.
Yeah. I really like that. So as I said, there were different rivalries, there were different conflicts. And I just want quickly, maybe we'll start with you, Uguchi. Who you support, and in just three sentences, just say why, please. Only three sentences, so okay. We can move on. So, Nsutta versus Alikita.
I support Nsutta because
three sentences.
This is hard. I mean, it's complicated, but I feel she kind of lay low a bit, kind of suppressed her ego for the greater good, for her greater. Honestly, I don't know how to describe it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's.
Nasiba, Nsutta or Alikisa, who do you support?
Both of them.
Both of them. To be honest.
Both of them.
But they were amazing. It's just hard to pick. That's the good thing about this book.
Yeah. Okay,
Chirabo or Gibwa?
Chirabo.
Why?
Don't mind me. I like both of them, right? But maybe because Chirabo is the main character, so I understand more about.
I really
about
like Chirabo. I see a lot of myself in Chirabo because I think as a young child, a lot of people started calling me sexist. That word feminism didn't really come about till I was in uni. But even when I was a child, like I was just super hyper aware of like you know how different we were in this world. I remember feeling angry that women got pregnant and men didn't get to get pregnant. I remember feeling just angry. And I remember in Jess 1, Jess 2, people used to say I was a sexist because I was always favoring the girls in my class and I was quite outspoken. So I see myself a lot in Chirabo, but I just think she was too wise and smart and just couldn't relax.
But this is a hard question, asking who we support, because I can understand why both these opposing forces do like have come to where they've come to.
Right.
So I support both of them. It's just who I guess maybe who do I identify with more? Okay. I identify more with Chirabo because of the way she grew up and her wiseness, her inquisitiveness, how she wants to go out in the world and kind of learn. And kind of same with Nsutta, she kind of did the same. She went out, she went to school, and she didn't compromise on that with her love for Chirabo's grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nasiba, is it the same with you? Chirabo versus Gibwa?
Who do I identify with?
Yeah.
Oh, I actually identify with Chirabo because Chirabo, in so many ways, but let me just mention, in addition to what Ugochi said, this is also another way that I identify with her. It's that, you know, when Chirabo was young and she was growing, she was very feisty, you know.
Yeah.
She wanted a whole lot. And now she's grown and now she has become the kind of woman who is okay or who stomachs her man cheating. And, you know, Nsutta said something at the end that she thought Chirabo would fly, you know. But here is she now, you know, bending and adjusting and, you know, everything to suit. And so in that sense, like, I see myself a lot. I see myself in that character, too, that you just think that you're just taking on the world. But you see, the forces that are against you are beyond you. So you are just growing and there are a lot of, like, you are even in a relationship and you're realizing that you are adjusting and you are stitching and you are doing this just so that the clothes could fit.
Yeah, you can't fly. It's
reality. Yes, like you're not flying as high as you want to.
Yeah,
because you're trying to adjust. You're even trying to bend on some of your political ideologies or just trying to make excuses even for your partner, you know, just to explain why you are in this situation when you are the person who is vehemently against this.
No, I remember in the beginning, because I read the beginning of the book just before I came here, and they were like, the parts where she was flying, they were like, she flew to the sky and she kept going up and up and up and up, and then the world beneath her was dark and she could, she felt she could do anything. And in the middle of the book, it was already like, there was something that happened in the middle of the book. She was chastising Nsuta, and I think she was just, her thoughts was just like, I can't believe Nsuta went with Miro or something like that, knowing that he was with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then to the end, where it's like, okay, Sio, I forgive you. Nsuta, I understand what you did. Let everybody live happily.
Exactly.
And that was that. And that was it. So it's just interesting. Okay, another fight was Nambi, and Nambi versus Tom and Tom's family. So who do you kind of see their point of view a bit more, or who do you identify with, or who do you support?
The three of them.
Okay, this is a weird, these are weird questions, so maybe it wasn't phrased properly. Then Chirabo versus Nanku. So Nanku is her mom.
I understand two of them. I understand as a child the craving for a mother, and I understand that a child who Miyoko Kawakumi wrote Breast and Eggs. I don't know. That's also another book that you must. It's Asian. And you know, in that book, she tells you about like what it means to, like when you say you want a child, do you mean you want to get pregnant or you want to have a child? And when you say you want to have a child, there are so many intersections. Like a child, and there was a statement that stays in my head, says that even if you pick the child from the streets, the child is yours. Yeah. You know, and that's to say that the fact that you push the baby out, does not mean the child is yours, or does not make you a mother.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that's what Makumbi tried to show us in that relationship between Chirabo and her mother. That look, Chirabo, she's not even your mother. Your mother is in the house.
Yeah.
Your mother is in the house. Like, these are women who have taken care of you since you were born. Now you are looking for somebody who has abandoned you. You know, and when you got there, whatever you were looking for, you saw. Like, she didn't want you.
Yeah.
It's not as if she was a victim of circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Even in her old age, where she could look back and regret that on her decision.
For you in the funeral.
For once, regretted for it. And you would think that at a point, I thought, oh, maybe she'll regret and go and bake. When, oh, she moved on with her life, you know.
And for the birth certificate, too. That woman was gone. Yes. Poor, like, I don't own you. I don't know you. What are you?
I don't know you. The fact that you came from me, that's not mean you belong to me. You're not for me. Like, I don't want you. You know, it's okay. You know how people think that if you give birth to a child, you are a mother, you are a mother. I don't want you. And it's okay for me not to want you. It's okay. You know, it's okay to give up your child in the adoption homes and all of that. I don't want you.
All right. So this is the last question, I think, or second to the last question. In the end, let's all ask this question to ourselves. Do you think Chirabo has learned about herself and her place in the world? I think we kind of answered that question.
Yes, we've answered. Yes, we kind of answered that question.
Yeah.
She did. She piped down. I think, but isn't it sad that she... And again, back to Nsuta's question. So you didn't fly eventually. Do we wish, okay, just if we put ourselves in Nsuta's shoes, do we wish our granddaughters to fly?
Yes.
Yes, but it's not the reality of the world.
So yes. We're going to ask our granddaughters, you didn't fly eventually. Isn't that sad, though? So isn't that we live in this perpetuity of hope?
Well,
I mean, she's what does flying mean? So to what extent?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
To what extent?
I would tell my granddaughters to fly, but also I would tell my granddaughters the realities of the world. So they have an idea of to what extent they can fly and do things, but not be disappointed.
But you're already creating a glass ceiling for them.
I don't want to tell them that it's not possible. I just want to tell them the realities of things. Like, if you try this.
Okay, so tell, but not put a restriction.
Yeah.
But I actually highlighted this part because I somehow thought that it would come up about how the part where she asked there, she thought she would fly.
Yeah.
And what she meant, she thought she would break rules, upset things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, and now she guess like she has clipped her wings and buried them. Yeah. And you know, Chirabo gave a response and said that this was the second time Insuta was saying what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And Insuta explained that the reason she was saying is that because she thinks that she will marry Kabuye's son. That's Sio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As soon as she finishes school. And then this one's response was, he believes in feminism. And she said that in the Luganda way. And then she said, he's not afraid of vagina. And she asked him that, how did she know? She said she showed it to him and all of that. And her response was, no sting. Her wings were not clipped. She said no sting was taken. If we acquiesce in hiding our bodies, we allow the mist to stay. But taking away the mist, take away a little power some women have. And that was what she said. And her response was, it is dangerous to keep feminism power down there, whether it is a myth or a mystery. We put a target on our bodies. Sooner or later, they come to raid. Unless you did not hear about the women raped during the war. And for a long time, Suta kept quiet. Then she sighed, I guess you are growing up. You know, and she said nothing takes the sting out of a woman like marriage. She was explaining that women clip their wings when they are married, and when their children arrive, the window closes. Wife, mother, age, role model, the respect that comes with these roles is the water they pour on your fire. And Chirabo still says that every woman resists. She told Insuta that every woman resists. Often it is private. And this statement was very important to me. I even highlighted it that every woman resists these things. So Insuta thinks that just because you, when you marry, all of your things, like they clip your wings. And she says, every woman resists. Often it is private. Most of our resistance is so everyday that women don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
It is life. Even the worst of us, like Auntie Waye, who massage the male ego with allow men to be men, are not really shrinking but managing their men. And Suta was silent as if digesting Chirabo's words. Mm. Then she sighed, I wish I could see you. And she said, I think you do. And I think that that statement was in my, like, every woman resists. Like, just because you are outside the world of this particular woman, you think that, oh, when she got married, she's been tamed. Her fire, like, she's not flying. But every woman is resisting, but it's often in private. So we don't see it. They don't talk about their resistance, but they are resisting in all of the ways that they can, even in the smallest ways in their houses, they resist. Like, even Auntie YA, that we think that the man, she's massaging the male ego. She's not. She's only managing her husband. It does not mean that she's not resisting. She's resisting in some certain instances.
And anyhow,
exactly. And you know,
mm-hmm.
they always ask that, what does freedom mean to you? What does feminism, what does resistance mean to you? And resistance means different things even between the three of us seated here. Resistance will mean different things for us in our own lives. Like to Ugochi, maybe resistance will come in some ways in her home, in the office, anything. Like you, Amara, like me, like it will come, and even in wherever we find ourselves, the countries we find ourselves, resistance will mean different ways and in different things. It does not mean we are not resisting just because there is no collective resistance.
No, and I think it's what I was trying to allude to at first, which is that there's no utopian feminism. We struggle in our own different ways. It cuts across generations. To me, there's no even African or white. Okay, maybe there is African and white feminism, but do you know what? It's still
there's African feminism.
There's an academic theory that exists that way.
Nobody entered that research.
Corrected myself, but my point is that as women, because of our bodies, because of the way we were made, we are still facing, no matter where we are at in the world, we are still facing similar struggles, right? And there will be wins, which we talked about, some significant, but we are still very much constricted to a man's world. So we will resist, but there will be pushback, but we'll resist. Do you see what I mean? So it's kind of bittersweet. I think that's the story, the crux of the matter.
Feminism is it's such a difficult topic.
I think it's difficult. I think, yeah, I really like the perspective that, you know, the author really tried to show us generation by generation, but it's still the same nonsense because we live in a man's world. I can't.
And that's not going to change.
No, it's not going to change. We need to live in hope. And that's why Nsutta was very excited in the beginning. Remember, Chirabo is one generation removed from her. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Chirabo is her child. Chirabo is like her grandchild. So she's seen it all, right? But I just found it fascinating that in the beginning, she was filled with like, this girl can fly. She's a witch and she's going to fly, right? Knowing what she knows, like, who knows, 30, 40 something years of knowledge. And the end, she was still very disappointed to ask, so you did not fly. Mm-hmm. So it just means we really live in that perpetuity of hope.
Yeah.
That is going to be different. There's going to be, and it's not to like discredit like the breaks, because from Nsutta's time to now, I mean, there's equal pay, there's this movement, there's that movement. So we live on, but we have to live in hope. We're going to be asking our children, so you did not fly. Why didn't you fly? But why do you expect me to fly? Don't you live in the same world I lived in? It's the same struggle I'm struggling.
But some of their struggle can be alleviated that we were struggling with. So, you know, every generation has...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it gets better. But the crux of the matter, is it that less men are cheating? Is it that... Less what you understand, men still only have 2 weeks paternity leave, so the struggle is there, it's getting a bit better. But at the crux of the matter, don't come up to me and be asking me, so you didn't fly? Why didn't you fly in your own generation? All right, so I think this is the last part, which is, what is your favorite quote? And state why. I'm not really good at quotes. Ugochi is like a queen. And I know, Nasiba, you have one or two quotes that you've told us about. So I'll leave you guys to answer. Nasiba, you go first.
Oh, I thought Ugochi was going first.
Oh, yeah. Ugochi, go okay. First. Nasiba, think of your own. But Nasiba, I even know your own quotes, Seth. So I don't understand why you're shy. But Ugochi, go first.
Let me just say, there are so many good quotes as I was reading, but this is just the only one I recorded when I started reading in the beginning. So it was the narrator that said, a witch is a witch. A witch was a witch. No such thing as a good one. But this is when I thought that this book was more of a, not the direction that it went, more of like a spiritual reading.
Well, why did you think it was a good quote?
Maybe because a witch is a witch. No such thing as a good one. Kind of like a preacher is a kind of like we're not perfect in general as human beings. So witches, preachers,
okay, I see what you mean.
Can try to do good things.
Oh,
but we're still human. So I mean, there's going to be some bad in there. That's how I took it.
So good can be bad, bad can be good.
Yeah,
it's all like a mix.
It's a mix. We're human. Yeah. At the end of the day.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have good quotes. The only quote I remember is that stories keep telling the stories, if not when you're silent.
No, so let me quote it for you. Stories are critical.
Yeah.
The moment you fall silent, someone will tell it for you. So yeah. Stories are critical, Chirabu. The moment you fall silent. Me, I have a lot of quotes from it, but I will just talk about one quote from it that... and that was at the end. And I think I did mention this already, that so the narrator said there was kindness in the way Chirabo was losing Nsutta. That was after she left the house where the rain was falling. She saw her grandmother's body. They talked. You know, there was a lot of peace. And then she was going back to school. And then while she was leaving, it's just like there was kindness, even though Nsutta was dying. There was kindness in the way she was losing Nsutta. And for me, it stayed with me because, you know, the life is really very hard, you know, and very complicated. And before, when you talk about kindness, you think, oh, maybe in terms of giving. But you think about when someone is leaving you, or even when you're in a relationship that your partner is leaving you, or no matter what it is and the person is leaving you, then you think about how, what it means for there to be kindness in the way somebody would leave you. It means that there has to be some sort of empathy. There has to be some sort of, it just has to, it has to be nice.
Nice, you know? And I guess you are at peace as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
the
like,
person dying, you are at peace. Person, yeah. You're really at peace. You're okay. It's very empathetic the way you're living. So I completely get that.
And I also took that quote as like, Chirabo took as much as she could from Nsuta, like all the good, mm-hmm. like she's full from Nsuta's presence.
Yes, 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 yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. It's crazy. Like Nsuta was such a big character and she kind of shaped most of the characters. Tom, Chirabo, Alikisa, Miro. She was big, but it's crazy. She was suffering right, like from teenagers, like with her eyesight, then not getting the love of her life, then mm-hmm. even in this horrible situation where you have a bad reputation from the villagers, then finally getting breast cancer, like mm-hmm. and then, oh sorry, I'm being blind most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's like so many bad things just happened to her,
but she didn't react like yeah. in a bad way. She didn't put that on everybody else.
She didn't react in a bad way. And you sometimes you forget because of how sunshiny like her character was. Like, yeah. just, okay, what next kind of thing. So big ups to her. Like,
she might be my favorite character. I'm going to go back and read this again. But
I'm telling you, like, should. It's yeah. worth it. Like, I was reading it in the car and I was just like, damn, I did not know this. I didn't see this. I didn't see it. Especially when... trying to explain the flying mm-hmm. in the beginning.
Yes.
It just makes so much sense. Like, you know, Nsuta was clearly lying or making up stories when she was going on, but she was so enthusiastic to have Chirabo. Around. Who knows? Maybe she was lonely as yeah. well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was just so enthusiastic, so happy, so excited to have her around that she kept egging her on. Oh, you flew today? Okay, I saw you flying. Okay, I saw your mother. Meanwhile, you know the poor mother is not coming back. Oh, bless her. Anyway, any last words, Nasiba? It was really nice having you on, yeah. and I'm so sorry for all the technical glitch. But any last
words? Well, I just want to say that First Woman is a very important book that yeah. everyone should read. It hinges on feminism, the sort of feminism that's not in your face. It centers women a lot in the book, and that's one thing I like.
Mm-hmm.
The men are just like passive, but they are not very, very active. But it centers a lot of women in the book. It may look like a heavy book, but it has a lot to teach you. The language is good. I love the language. I love how Makumbi wrote the Luganda, the words
mm-hmm.
in like her local dialect, unapologetically. She didn't even bother to explain to us what it means. She didn't even italize them. And for me, I live for that always. Like, just put it in the book. If you're interested, you find out what it means. You know? So I like that about First Woman. I feel like it's a book that is here to stay. It has stayed with me. I go back to it all of the time. And I just encourage everyone to read it and know the book for themselves. The book has so many interpretations. And when you read it, you will know the book for yourself and the part that stays with you or what you understand by the plot. That's the beautiful thing about it. You know, it doesn't just have one message. So there are lots of messages for everybody. And yes, so that's my.
Thank you so much, Nasiba, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Nasiba, thank you for joining us. Like, I'm saying it, like, before we even spoke on that intro call, I didn't get First Woman. I remember complaining to you that it sounded like Nervous Condition. What's all this like rural stuff?
Oh, you didn't like Nervous Condition.
I know we did. We loved it, but we're like, oh my god, we're back there. Like, it just feels like repetitive and what's this rural urban and it's so long. I just, until I spoke to you, I didn't get it. And then just speaking to you, I was just able to concentrate because that's when I switched to Audible. And again, I finished it 3 days ago and I started reading it again today. So thank you, because yeah, you really like,
you opened something in my mind.
So I'm happy you did that, and I'm sure that's what you do with your other book reviews as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you do. I think I even had a snoop on your website, your book review website, and I was like, yeah, this is definitely your thing. So thank you for what you're doing for African literature and just being Pan-African in general. I think it's so refreshing. And yeah, so that is the end of our book review and our podcast episode. And we hope you enjoyed it. You should go and read The First Woman by Jennifer Makumbi. Our next book, which we just decided on today, is The Old Drift by Namwali Serpell. And we are taking you to Zambia. So yes, we're going to be reviewing it soon. I can't
hopefully by the end of the year. We'll try.
This one is 300 and something pages, but the good thing is that it's on Audible. So we've come to the end of our podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Please do not forget to check us out on all our social media handles. So Twitter, Afro-Reads. And Instagram, Afroreads Podcast. Please read the next book, which we've said already, The Old Drift. And we hope to see you in our next episode. Till then, have an amazing time doing whatever you do. Be the first woman, man, wherever you find yourself. All right, bye.
Bye.